Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live, weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. We know that many parents and caregivers of kids are stressed right now. But what about the children? In a few minutes, I'll talk with two mental health professionals about the stress and anxiety that children are feeling and what we can do to help. But first, we continue to follow the developments in the death of George Floyd, a 46-year-old black man who died in Minneapolis Monday night while in police custody. Video captured by a bystander shows a white Minneapolis police officer kneeling on Floyd's neck for several minutes as the handcuffed man repeatedly stated he couldn't breathe. He later died. The Minneapolis police chief announced Tuesday afternoon that the four officers involved in the arrest have been fired. And yesterday evening, hundreds of people gathered at the scene of the arrest to demand justice. That protest started out somewhat peacefully, then quickly escalated when the group marched toward Minneapolis Police Department's 3rd Precinct on Lake Street near the Target and Cub food stores. Police in riot gear fired tear gas and rubber bullets. Some protesters damaged the precinct's windows and sprayed graffiti. Squad cars also got damaged. NPR News reporter John Collins was there last night and joins me now. Hi, John.
Hi, Angela.
So I was following you on Twitter last night. You were posting during this protest. How are you doing this morning?
Well, I'm good. You know, my clothes and all my recording gear is drying out, but, you know, I do think they're still cleaning up the scene out there. You know, there are shopping carts and obviously, like you said, graffiti and all sorts of other stuff that was at the scene of the protest.
There's tear gas everywhere. It was raining at times. So tell us more about what happened last night. I know initially hundreds of people were gathered near the Cup Foods on Chicago Avenue where George Floyd was arrested. It seemed calm from the photos I could see, and then things changed.
Yes, it started out on 38th and Chicago, which is where Floyd was apprehended by police and detained. And then the march spread, or march went all the way like 2.5 miles to the 3rd Precinct location. And from what I saw of that particular march, it was people tried to keep their distance. Most people were masked and it was very peaceful and calm. They got to the precinct and there were some confrontations. It did escalate, as you said, some squad windows and other windows were smashed. Police fired non-lethal rounds at the crowd. We're still trying to pin down exactly what they were firing. They fired tear gas, and there were reports that they used pepper spray on protesters. This is in a pretty strong rain at times, and people were spread out on four corners of a pretty major intersection, Lake Street, Minnehaha's, and police did not close down either of those roads. So people were kind of swarming dangerously through traffic for much of the evening. And so it was a very chaotic situation.
And how does this compare to other protests that you've covered? I know it reminded me of the beginning of the 4th Precinct protest that we saw about 5 years ago.
Yeah, you know, there have been a number of major protests against police brutality in the Twin Cities. So after Philando Castile's death and after Jamar Clark's death. And this one, it really struck me that a lot of the protesters, especially towards the end of the night, seemed younger than you normally see at these sort of things. I talked to a bunch of teenagers who just saw it on social media and just came out.
We're starting to hear more about who George Floyd was. I know that you were able to contact a family member. What did you learn about him?
Well, we know George Floyd is 46 years old. African-American. His family tells me he has roots in the Houston area, but he worked as a bouncer at a Minneapolis Latin music club called Conga, where he was known as Big Floyd by customers and musicians. And some musicians tell me he was supportive and kind. He'd take care of them, make sure that they were safe when they were getting drinks or playing shows, help them load in their equipment, which is a big deal for musicians, obviously. And, you know, so they're upset at the loss, and the family is obviously distraught. Not only did they lose a family member, but his death is so high profile, it's garnering international attention, and the video itself is so disturbing.
And they're primarily in the Houston area. They're in Texas, most of his family.
My understanding is that's where he is initially from, mm-hmm. but the family members, he does have at least one family member in the Twin Cities, and then some elsewhere around the country.
So, John, is there more information today on what led to George Floyd's arrest? I mean, like, what happened Monday night?
I mean, all we know is what police told us, which is that they were called to the site of a South Minneapolis corner store after some sort of report of forgery. We don't know exactly what happened next, but some surveillance videos do give us an idea. The Washington Post published a video showing officers taking Floyd out of a vehicle and then walking away with him. And then the next thing that we as the public see is bystander video of an officer kneeling on Floyd's neck, which goes on for almost 10 minutes. And, you know, you see obviously him begging to be let go, saying he can't breathe. And then he stops talking, mostly moving, and people are gathering and pleading with the officer to stop kneeling on him. And the last part of that video that we see is the paramedics taking him away. Police department does say that there's body camera footage from the officers, and we may not see that for quite a while, depending on whether criminal charges are filed or not.
And we know that, you know, it appears, you know, swift action was taken. The four officers involved were fired yesterday. But what do we know about what's ahead for them? Could the officers appeal and get their jobs back, arguing that they were fired before a full investigation could be completed?
We may not know how this all ends up for quite a while. The criminal investigation can take months and months to complete. And it's not unusual, as you said, for officers to be able to contest their firings. It's a right that they have typically within their collective bargaining agreements. And analysis by the Pioneer Press not that long ago found that about half of all fired police officers in the state eventually get their jobs back after some sort of arbitration. But if there is any sort of criminal charges and then there is a conviction, police officers who are convicted of some serious crimes automatically lose their licenses. But that would be very far in the future here.
And what do we know about the body camera video from the officers? The cameras were on and rolling, as far as we know.
That's what the Minneapolis Police Department says. We do know there were four officers that were at the scene, but we only know who two of them are. The other two have not yet been identified by anyone, and the department has not identified any of the officers at this point.
Do we know anything about how long any of these officers have served or how long they've been on the force?
We do have some ideas about two of the officers and, you know, about their previous experiences. For instance, two officers who've been identified on social media and by news organizations. One of them is Officer Derek Shelvin, who had previously been involved in a fatal shooting. And that's about a decade ago. And then the other is Officer Tu Tao. And it is pretty typical for the BCA, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, to release the names of all officers involved in fatal incidents within a couple of days. So we should be learning more pretty soon.
John, what do you think about the impact of the FBI's involvement in this? The police chief yesterday said that he, you know, requested the FBI to come in immediately to work on an investigation. Will that make a difference?
I mean, so all the authorities that are looking into this say that they're cooperating together. This is the first time we've seen the FBI actually come in a high-profile fatal incident involving police in Minnesota. And typically what the FBI would do is look for civil rights, your constitutional civil rights violations, and assist the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which would be the lead agency looking at the criminal investigation here.
And I know you've done extensive reporting and previous high-profile killings of Black men by police in Minnesota. So how do you think this case, how is it differing And is there anything that's unique about this case from prior cases that we've seen recently?
I mean, so the response of both the public and authorities were really, really fast here. Mm-hmm. The public, you know, obviously the video spread on Monday night, just very soon after it had been taken and posted. And the police department issued a statement essentially saying that there had been a what they called a suspect suffering medical distress that didn't give any more information. But when the video came out, people saw that an officer was kneeling on Floyd's neck even after he stopped moving or talking. So people felt it was misleading. And that's, I think, probably part of why they gathered so quickly at the scene and how the protest came together with so many people at a time when people are like very, very wary of gathering in large groups.
All right. This is NPR news reporter John Collins, who was at the protest, the demonstration last night, who will continue to cover this case along with our other reporters on our team here. John, thank you for your time. Continue to be safe and thank you for making yourself available for an update.
You're welcome.
Before the death of George Floyd, the relationship between the Minneapolis Police Department and some community members was already very tense. And right now, I want to bring in another voice into the conversation. Joining me on the phone now is Leslie Redman, and Leslie is the president of the Minneapolis chapter of the NAACP. Hi, Leslie.
Hello, Mrs. Davis. Thank you for having me today.
Hi. I was following you on social media as well last night, and I know that you were out at the protest. So how are you doing this morning?
You know, I'm hanging in there. If you saw my video, you saw I got caught up in the tear gas and everything, too, unfortunately.
And so how do you describe what was happening out there last night, how it began? It started there where Mr. Floyd was arrested and then the march moved. So how was it in the beginning?
So I think you articulated it very well. It was very peaceful. People did have on masks. One of the reasons, though, that I articulated to people at the second scene that people masks weren't on, because people might even notice in my video, my mask was no longer on, because it's very hard to have a mask on when the tear gas is all over the place, right? Like, even when I was driving up from the first location to the second location, you could see the tear gas blocks and blocks away. So if you were extremely close, it was very hard for it not to get in your system. And so taking off the mask was a way of helping yourself just breathe a little bit. And so I think people have to understand that. In addition, you know, a lot of people are critical of the young people and how they respond. But if you really take into perspective, young people have grown up almost their entire life watching Black bodies murdered on Facebook. Right? Like, this is crazy. And they've not received any grief counseling. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to do with their frustration. Like, we're talking about property, right? Like, when we think about the destruction, it's property. But what about the people whose lives are being lost and these young people who really don't know what to do with themselves? And we should be pouring into them. There were no opportunities to de-escalate. I didn't see anyone from the police force come out and try to de-escalate the situation. It was immediately escalated. And even when I was moving forward to ask, you know, you all are putting up barricades to protect yourself, but who's going to protect these young people, you know? And then that's when I got tear gas with everybody else.
But Leslie, it is difficult to watch. I mean, I was watching, you know, windows getting smashed, a police vehicle getting smashed and things dragged out of it. So how do we get from calm to destruction of property?
I mean, I think the anger was there. And the reality of the situation is that the anger is rightfully placed. You know, like, the reality of it is that Black people are losing their lives and other Black people are being traumatized watching it. And one of the things that I want America to put into perspective, right, is that young college students do this after victories, if we want to be honest and transparent about it, right? Like, when we see images of people tearing up cars and all these things. And I'm not justifying it and saying that it's correct, but I think we need to get to the root of it, right?
The why.
And so instead of asking why these young people are angry and, you know, terrorizing and breaking things, ask, like, what is at the root of it? And maybe if we stopped killing Black people, we wouldn't be here. Had any one of those four officers stopped and said, we've been on this man long enough, he's in handcuffs, he's bleeding out of his nose, he is dying, and said that he can't breathe, that would have never happened, right? Like, we could have eliminated this on the scene, right? Bystanders tried to talk the officers down, and it did nothing. And so instead of, like, trying to look at the young people, I think we need to look and listen to them and then help them through their grieving process.
What are your thoughts? Did you watch the entire video? And after watching, you know, parts of it, of all of it, what were your initial thoughts?
You know, I honestly did not want to watch the video. And one of the things I want Black people to know is it is okay to not continue to keep traumatizing yourself. You know, one of the things that we try to do with the Minneapolis NAACP is really articulate what goes on through our words and our press statements. I did watch the video and I was completely heartbroken. You know, when I look at this situation, this could be any of us. It really can, because I want people to know it. Like, the brutality, the men are killed, the Black women are brutalized, and we are killed as well. And it is heartbreaking. And, you know, I was saying, my ex, James Badu, whenever we are driving around, I get extremely nervous when I see police officers. And mind you, I don't do anything wrong. You know, my tags are good, my license is good. But I know when officers stop us, that could be the end of my life. You know, and I just don't know if all Minnesotans know what that feels like, and that fear. And then when these young Black kids are seeing that this man is on the ground with handcuffs on in the Minneapolis Police Department, the same people that they're told are there to protect and serve them, all they see is being over-police brutalized and then murdered by these individuals.
So describe the conversations that are happening right now, I think, with Black families in particular. How are people talking about this to their children?
Honestly, I'm very curious about that myself, because what I've been seeing is a transformation over time, right? When we think back, it was don't go out too late at night, don't wear hoodies, don't do this, don't do that. But over a series of years, we've been seeing no matter what you do, you end up dead. And for me, what that's saying is, yes, we should tell our kids to be safe, but we need to actually address the systemic issue. And I think for far too long, we put the burden on Black bodies, not realizing that it's literally their Black bodies that America has criminalized, right? It's literally our humanity that they have stripped from us. And that's one of the things that a lot of local leaders on the ground are talking about, is this is not just a civil rights issue, but this is a human rights issue. And what I would encourage parents to talk about is helping their young people to recognize that you are a human being and your life does matter, and we need to make sure your life matters, and then start building relationships. I'm super thankful that we have Chief Arredondo. I cannot applaud and thank him enough for his work that he is doing and making sure that justice prevails. And so what I think we should be teaching young children is to be the change that they want to see.
What do you think should be the next step in the process? The four officers have been fired. What now?
So we really need Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman to step up to the plate and actually charge these officers. I think that there may be potentially both state and federal charges that can go, like I said, not just from the civil rights standpoint, because I know the FBI Civil Rights Division is looking into it, but also from the human rights perspective, because our human rights are being violated. And so I would like to see these officers charged, because what they did was a murder. And if it was anyone else and it was caught on videotape and we knew who they were, they would have been in handcuffs already, right? And so no one is above the law, and they should be held accountable. In addition to that, I think the community needs a lot of resources and a lot of healing. We were already in a state of emergency before COVID-19. You added on the extra burden of COVID-19, and now you're adding on the trauma of a Black man being murdered and masses having to watch that, right? We keep getting burdens put on us, but nothing taken off. I think we really need resources poured into our community. We need mental health providers. We need healers. And I think the state and the city needs to be able to provide those resources. We need a paradigm shift with all police departments, specifically starting with the Minneapolis Police Department. We need training that's culturally relevant, that comes from the community. We need to really push for a paradigm change.
Leslie, this has received national attention, and I know that you have relationships with national leaders at the NAACP. Have you talked
Yes.
with the national NAACP president?
Yes, I actually just got off the phone with President Johnson. We went on Instagram Live last night when I was actually still on the scene, and we'll be going live again tonight. I'm not 100% sure what So we're working out those details right now. So if anyone's interested, you can follow President Derek Johnson on Instagram, Leslie E. Redman. We'll be going live at some point tonight. The National NAACP is extremely supportive. People are reaching out from all over the nation, and this is a crisis. It does feel like it's open season on Black people. You know, Ida B. Wells, one of the founders of the NAACP, she used to say a man was lynched today. And I saw the National NAACP post that, and that's exactly right. And he was lynched. They just didn't use a rope.
Have you been in contact with George Floyd's family? Have you been able to reach out or hear what they're saying about this?
I have not personally talked to his family. I know that community organizers have been in touch with the family. Someone has been sending me the information. I know some of his family's in Texas, and I believe he had a fiance. And so I personally have not talked to them, but I definitely plan on talking to them, and I send them prayers and all of my sympathy because they shouldn't have to go through this. George Floyd should still be alive today.
Well, that is Leslie Redman, the president of the Minneapolis chapter of the NAACP. Leslie, thank you for joining us here on NPR today.
Thank you for having me.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet us at Angela Davis NPR. And if you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.